I'm Nahla Ayed, host of Ideas. In this age of clickbait and online shouting, Ideas is a meeting ground for people who want to deepen their understanding of the world. Join me as we crack open a concept to see how it plays out over place and time and how it matters today. From the rise of authoritarianism to the history of cult movies, no idea is off limits. Ideas is on the CBC Listen app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Next, we help Kaylee.
What?
Sudi.
What?
And even entire families hear their loved ones again. But they are only a few of the 1,000 people that we are going to help hear again today. We got our hands on over $3 million of cutting-edge hearing technology.
Welcome to the sound of charity in the 21st century. He's known as Mr. Beast, and he is a YouTube phenomenon. The videos are part philanthropy, part spectacle. They routinely rack up views in the hundreds of millions. A lot of Mr. Beast's fans are kids, and they love him.
He even cured the blind people, and the people gave hate on him for doing that. And then he made another video about curing deaf people. He doesn't care. He's amazing. He's helping other people out.
It's a win-win, right? Mr. Beast becomes rich and famous, and people around the world get life-changing acts of charity. But spend a little time in this world of philanthrotainment, an idea you'll hear about in this episode. Matthew Wade studies charitable giving and crowdfunding. He says he finds Mr. Beast's approach to philanthropy troubling.
I think at his core, he is a good person acting in good faith. But there's something about the quite intentional avoidance of discussing the root causes of these problems, that everything is kept on the level of amelioration and kind of lightness and happiness, rather than veering into any kind of discussion of the causes of these problems, is what makes it dystopian in a way.
What are some of the dynamics at play when life-changing acts of charity are doled out for YouTube views? For one thing, Matthew Wade says, the people receiving that charity are cast in some pretty uncomfortable roles.
The Beast philanthropy model relies on the beneficiaries of his philanthropy featuring prominently in the video. And so does that mean that such persons are being exploited, potentially? And does it also raise questions around consent? Because if you're in a difficult and desperate circumstance, such as being homeless, and someone comes along and says, I can change your life if you let me feature you in a video, can you really say no to that?
Eddie Hogg studies charitable giving and public attitudes towards charity. He says Mr. Beast has two things figured out very clearly. We tend to give when the appeal feels personal and when it tugs at our emotions, and that's okay.
Philanthropy, charity, fundamentally is about love. It's about love and caring for others. So we give when we are motivated by love, when we are motivated by caring.
You'll meet Eddie Hogg later this hour. The philanthrotainment of Mr. Beast, today on Tapestry. I'm Mary Hines.
Hi, this is Rosie Fernandez for CBC Radio. I'm here at Varsity Stadium in Toronto for a school track meet. I'm going to talk to some of the kids and find out what their thoughts are on Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast!
Do you guys watch Mr. Beast?
Yeah.
And do you like him?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
A yes and a no. Why do you like him?
I really like how Mr. Beast is like hearing people who are like deaf and blind. What really makes me kind of angry is like people on Twitter always complain about Mr. Beast like taking advantage of people. And that's why I like Mr. Beast.
And you don't think he's taking advantage of anybody?
Yeah, I don't think he's taking advantage of anybody. He does like a lot of good things, and it just makes me mad that people on Twitter just complain about it.
What are you learning from him?
I'm just learning that, like, being kind, I guess.
Being kind.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you. You did not like Mr. Beast. Tell me why.
I don't like Mr. Beast because I think he's kind of a poser. And also, he gives people money just to compete in games. I'd like to see him donate to more charities and stuff like that.
He makes really high-quality videos. And overall, he's just a kind-hearted person. He gives money free to people. He doesn't use money for his own gain. He uses money for other people.
And so what do you learn from watching him?
That kindness is very powerful.
Do you guys like Mr. Beast?
Yeah.
Mr. Beast.
Why do you like Mr. Beast?
Because he helps the poor, and he's a very good person.
What do you learn from them?
I learned that what I want, some people need more than that. So I think that's a really good thing about Mr. Beast's videos.
That he's giving to those in
yeah,
need.
Yeah, of course we like Mr. Beast. Because he helps a lot of people in need.
Listen, he even cured the blind people, and the people gave hate on him for doing that. And then he made another video about curing deaf people. He doesn't care that. He's amazing.
He started from, like, nowhere. He's not, like, a famous person's kid or something. So you could really start from anywhere and make it anywhere.
If you were to meet Mr. Beast, what would you want him to give you?
I don't know. Nothing, I guess.
Nothing. I'd just be happy to meet him.
Probably, like, obviously money and, like a messy signed jersey.
Well, like, I wouldn't ask him for money because that's just awkward. But I would ask for an autograph or something.
Nice. Or for him to subscribe to my YouTube channel.
That was Rosie Fernandez in Toronto with some of Mr. Beast's biggest fans. For centuries, spiritual traditions all over the world have said the best kind of charity happens very quietly. And if you're really doing it right, the human being on the receiving end never even knows the identity of the one who has given. Quiet and anonymous are not words you'd associate with Mr. Beast, also known as Jimmy Donaldson. We asked for an interview with Mr. Donaldson for this episode, but we didn't get a reply from his team. Matthew Wade teaches at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia. He studies crowdfunding in charity, among other things, with a special interest in how people decide who is deserving and what makes for a worthy cause. Matthew Wade is my guest. Hi there.
Hi, Mary. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you here. You've suggested that a Mr. Beast charity video might invite the words crass, gauche, kind of exhausting to watch. What is it about his work that makes so many people feel a little uncomfortable watching?
Yeah, it's quite hard to articulate, but I think part of the problem that people have with Mr. Beast, why he rubs so many people the wrong way, why he sets off all these red flags, comes down to a question of how can someone who often makes, you know, in the minds of some, such tacky and crass videos also be a person of virtue? And that kind of response was especially common in the philanthropic video where Donaldson pays for cataract surgery for 1,000 people. And the presentation of that video was, in the minds of some people, quite crass. And, you know, maybe there's a kind of cultural prejudice that we have there that perhaps we need to get over, the idea that something has to be aesthetically pleasing to be ethically good. This is not just for the production of content or art, but also for charity as well, that we assume that charity always needs to be done in this really low-key, self-effacing, dignified kind of way. On the other hand, coming back to that sense of these videos rubbing people the wrong way, there is that ethically troubling idea that the core purpose of a Mr. Beast video is to entertain and to reach as broad an audience as possible. And the videos are intentionally quite devoid of any reflection, any social commentary, and are really stubbornly apolitical. It's always about what would be an entertaining spectacle. They're quite honest about this. I mean, the head of Beast Philanthropy, Darren Margolis, talks about what they produce as philanthrotainment. There's value and there's trepidation in that idea.
For anyone who hasn't seen Mr. Beast at work, self-effacing and dignified is not what's going on here. This was a moment. Recently, Mr. Beast paid for the cataract surgery that restored sight to 1,000 people.
When you come out of the surgery, what's the first thing that you're excited to see?
My son. He's been my rock through all of this.
Before the operation, you mentioned the first thing you wanted to see was your son.
Seeing him, seeing his face. That's what I miss, you know.
You're going to make me cry.
No, you're good, man. You're good. You're really good, man.
All right.
Oh, my God, man.
And there you go.
Don't cry, man. I can see everybody's facial features now. It's a little blurry with my tears coming out.
Would you walk me through what's happening in this video in particular? What buttons are being pushed in the viewer, in the audience?
Sure. So in this video, which garnered over 100 million views on YouTube, Mr. Beast, Jimmy Donaldson, is paying for the cataract surgery for 1,000 people, and he's partnering with a charitable organization to make this happen. And along with those scenes of people receiving the cataract surgery and then seeing with clear vision for the first time and then recording their reactions, that's the real core content of these videos. That is the main reason why Mr. Beast has attracted such a massive audience.
I have a surprise for you. Do you mind putting on this blindfold?
Hold on.
I know it's a little ironic that we just did the surgery. Satchel, take off your blindfold.
What?
This is your brand new Tesla.
Again, he's really masterful at this kind of content.
If we think for a minute just of what's on the screen, as opposed to, you know, the mechanics surrounding the way he operates, that this cataracts video is enormously popular. YouTube has it at more than 135 million views. What is it about the footage that's so compelling to so many people?
I think people really enjoy that vicarious pleasure of seeing somebody's life change dramatically for the better. And that in our day-to-day lives, most of us don't have a lot of capacity, whether that's time or money, to really make that meaningful change in somebody's life. But through these videos, we can get that vicarious pleasure of feeling ourselves as an empathetic person with a capacity to give. And that in these videos, Jimmy Donaldson says that by watching these videos, you are contributing to charity. You are helping me do this work. And if you keep watching, we can continue these really generous acts. And so it's that dual sense of that vicarious pleasure and feeling oneself to be part of a movement.
Mm. People donate to charity, of course, for all kinds of reasons. Something I've been grappling with in this whole Mr. Beast story is, does it get a little murky when the charity rebounds and serves the giver's own bottom line and the giver's own fame? How do you untangle what's driving Mr. Beast at this point? How much is the philanthro and how much is the tainment?
it's a really good question. It's funny, like Jimmy Donaldson is quite upfront about the business model in a way, and also quite upfront about acknowledging that he gives because it makes him feel good. He likes the responses that he gets from people. He is not some coldly utilitarian, effective altruist who calculates exactly where his giving might have the greatest impact in terms of lives saved, but he gives with an eye to what is entertaining, what makes for good visuals, what is an ideal kind of recipient that will play well with the audience. And that actually changes, that places some limits on who could feature in a Beast philanthropy video. You know, there's never going to be a controversial cause that's featured. There's never going to be a Beast philanthropy video, at least I don't think there will be, that features, say, Mr. Beast establishing a methadone clinic for long-term opioid-dependent users of drugs. There's never going to be a Mr. Beast video in support of the reproductive justice movement. These are just causes that won't resonate with the massive audience that he's trying to accumulate. That's one of the main criticisms that are sometimes made of this style of philanthropy, is that one of the values of philanthropy is that it can support causes for peoples that are otherwise marginalized and oppressed, that it can actually give voice to those causes that are otherwise suppressed. But Beast Philanthropy is not going to do that. But then coming back to the question about the kind of motivations for giving, certainly you could argue that Jimmy's giving is not purely altruistic. It's never completely disinterested. There's always something in return for him in terms of status and esteem and audience. But then others would argue that, well, there's no such thing as pure altruism anyway, and that at least through his very public giving, Donaldson is modeling to others, especially wealthy others, that you have a responsibility to give.
You're not alone in describing some of Mr. Beast's work as grimly dystopian. What triggered that feeling for you? Was there a moment, or was it more a vibe over the whole body of work?
I think it has to do not necessarily with Mr. Beast himself, who I think, and I want to make this clear, I think at his core he is a good person acting in good faith, but there's something about the deliberate lack of introspection, the quite intentional avoidance of discussing the root causes of these problems that he addresses in his videos, that everything is kept on the level of amelioration and kind of lightness and happiness, rather than veering into any kind of discussion of the causes of these problems, is what makes it dystopian in a way. It becomes this very niche form of thinking about these entrenched problems in our society that relies on heroic benefactors coming in to save the day. And that kind of philanthrocapitalism is not going to be a long-term remedy. And for a lot of young people, a lot of kids watching these videos, this will be their introduction to the idea of philanthropy. This is a concern I have, that that will be a narrow way of thinking about how they can be active citizens.
In some of the earlier charity videos, Mr. Beast gives a lot of money to people who are homeless.
Most people get mad and say this is a bad way to get views. Tell them, like, you're okay with this. Are you okay with it?
Hell yeah.
That's right,
best,
YouTube.
Best day of my life right here.
Homeless people don't care if I use them for views.
What do you make of the power dynamics in a situation like this?
Yeah, there are always really difficult questions in philanthropy when it comes to matters of exploitation and consent. The Beast philanthropy model relies on the beneficiaries of his philanthropy featuring prominently in the video. Their reactions have to be captured. That is the core content that will go viral. And so does that mean that such persons are being exploited, potentially? And does it also raise questions around consent? Because if you're in a difficult and desperate circumstance, such as being homeless, and someone comes along and says, I can change your life if you let me feature you in a video, you know, can you really say no to that? And I think to put it crudely, you can almost devise an equation for these questions around exploitation and consent. And that equation is made of factors like, what benefits will the participant receive if they take part in the video? And that is relative to what benefits does the creator receive? And is there a noticeable gap between the two, where the creator receives far more benefit, whether that is in revenue or esteem or status, than the participants in the video? And do the participants really have the agency to say no to being in the video? And do they have control over how they are represented in the video? Can they resist any representation that is patronizing or misleading or dehumanizing in some form? I think most viewers feel that Beast philanthropy videos generally fall on the okay side of this equation, but that other videos in this kind of genre of random acts of kindness are far more exploitative and have far less consent in those videos.
The charity work is just part of what Mr. Beast does. Some of the other videos center on outrageous challenges and props. He has crushed a Lamborghini with a giant hydraulic press.
Yes! Oh my God!
Wow, this is crazy!
I guess you're wondering, that Lamborghini doesn't work anymore.
Definitely doesn't work now.
He has eaten $100,000 worth of ice cream. In a recent video, he spent $500,000 on a plane ticket.
We're gonna fly on this jet that costs $500,000 per flight. And we're also gonna fly on this $25,000 private jet, a $10,000 first class seat, a blimp, and so much more.
help me make sense of these two things side by side, the charity and the decadence existing on the same 25-year-old's YouTube page.
Yes, it is. It is really odd. It's hard to make sense of it all. There's no denying that most of his regular videos are quite shallow at their core, where he knows what will go viral. And again, it's not necessarily an expression of his worldviews or his interiority. It's simply what he knows will work on the platform. And that brings up questions of whether the content is manipulative and insincere in a way that we kind of have this sense that there should be a sincerity attached to the art that people produce because we want that connection with the creator. I mean, Jimmy Donaldson himself has acknowledged the contradiction in this, and he says that, you know, my personal favorite videos are the ones where we help people, but that sometimes we have to make videos like this because videos like this where I crush a Lamborghini or an $800,000 ice cream, they help me grow my audience. They work on the platform so that when I make all this revenue, all these advertising deals, all these brand sponsorships, I have more money to give away. And so that's the rationale. That's the justification, is that only by doing these recklessly indulgent videos can Donaldson fund his more philanthropic work that has genuine real-world benefits. And so the question is this a model of philanthrocapitalism that we can live with, that we can tolerate buying into? Or is this philanthropy tainted money in a way?
That's a really good question. You study philanthropy and charity. Do you see this as an alarming moment?
My key concern is that the model of beast philanthropy doesn't really provide a call to action for the people who watch these videos. By telling viewers that just by watching these videos, you are donating to charity. And I understand that appeal, but because especially if you're a young person and you don't have time or money to give, then your attention is the only thing that you have. And so the idea that you can contribute to charity simply by giving your attention would feel really empowering for a young person. But beyond that, I worry that there's not a call to action. Jimmy Donaldson and Darren Margolis, the head of Beast Philanthropy, they recognize that the monetary contributions that they make in their philanthropy are just a drop in the ocean. They're acutely aware of that, but that the real value of what they do is driving a movement around kindness and empathy and getting young people in particular to think philanthropically, to think about becoming active citizens in their communities. And I do believe them when they talk about this. I do think they are making these claims sincerely. But I don't see this translation happening.
You're with Tapestry. Thanks for inviting us in, whether it's on podcast, on the CBC Listen app, or on CBC Radio 1. If you're listening online at cbc.ca/tapestry, hello to you. I'm Mary Hines. We're exploring the place where charity meets spectacle, the YouTube phenomenon Mr. Beast. My guest is Matthew Wade, who studies charity and crowdfunding at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia. There are centuries of spiritual traditions that say the best kind of charity is done very quietly. And if you can do it anonymously, that is the real sweet spot. Is that view hopeless in the age of YouTube? Is that just some quaint bygone notion that is gone for good?
Possibly. Again, it comes back to the question of, is what Jimmy Donaldson doing modeling giving to others, inspiring others to give, and generating a new ethos among particularly wealthy persons to demonstrate that you have a responsibility to give, and that also giving can be enjoyable. It can be personally pleasurable. And it's so hard to disentangle these motivations for giving and peer into the interiority of what is motivating Jimmy Donaldson. Because again, I think he's a good person, but there is sometimes a slightly kind of calculated aspect to what he is doing. And just to give you one One concrete example of this, I was thinking about a documentary that was made about Mr. Beast and Jimmy Donaldson. It's not exactly a hard-hitting documentary. It's pretty softball in terms of the presentation of Jimmy. But at the end of the documentary, there's a little scene of him giving $3,000 in cash to each of the cameramen.
Okay, come here. So what was your name again?
Cody.
Okay, Cody, here's a few $1,000 for filming. I've had this in my pocket, and you're with Josh, right? All right, Josh, here's a few grand as well. Thank you guys for filming this. It's been a fun episode. Thank you for watching.
What just happened?
I don't like to be conspiratorial or second guess someone's motivations. It's never easy to interpret someone's intentions, but it all feels just a tiny bit contrived that, you know, Jimmy is genuinely giving each of these guys $3,000, but it's hard to believe, given he is someone with an acute insight into this medium, that Jimmy doesn't know that this will be a perfect way to end this documentary. And in doing so, continue to cultivate a particular image of himself. But it does come back to that question of, am I publicly giving to be a good model of citizenship to others or to accrue status and esteem to myself? And can it be both? Is it even ethically problematic to be both, given that perhaps there's no such thing as purely altruistic giving?
In this realm of philanthropainment, Mr. Beast takes a lot of heat. I'm curious about the wider responsibility here. Is there a case to be made to blame YouTube for algorithms that reward, you know, shock value and a big show? Should we be assigning some blame to this human desire for spectacle and to be impressed and shocked and moved in ever-increasing ways?
I think there's a case to be made that perhaps we as viewers could think a little more critically about the genre of random acts of kindness videos, because they are really affecting to watch and we can understand their appeal. But again, it comes back to the equation of, are there forms of exploitation and lacking consent happening in these random acts of kindness videos? One of the troubling types of these random acts of kindness videos are the ones that begin with an initial act of harm. And so the examples I'm thinking of here are viral videos where somebody's in a restaurant, for example, they are really rude to the server, really, really treat them poorly, but then give them a $1,000 tip. And so they get both those reactions, both of the server feeling despondent or even fearful about that reaction of the customer being quite rude to them, but then the joy and elation of suddenly getting a $1,000 tip. Some people would argue that, well, the benefits outweigh the harms there because, you know, it's only a very brief form of harm, and then the benefit is perhaps exponentially greater than the harm. But to me, and maybe I'm just like an old school Kantian when it comes to these things, I can't reconcile myself to this, that any act of harm is justified by the subsequent benefit.
I keep going back to your example of the waiter who is treated abominably and then gets a $1,000 tip. And, you know, on camera, that person is having to jump through hoops repeatedly for the so-called philanthropists. I'm curious about the cost in human dignity. Is that something that figures into this?
Yes, there is a cost that comes with being seen as a subject of sympathy. And that cost increases relative to the audience that witnesses you as a subject of sympathy. And so that reminds me of another random act of kindness video that was discussed here in Australia quite a bit last year, where a TikTok creator, a young guy by the name of Harrison Pawlock, got somebody to record his interaction where he went up to an older woman, asked her to hold a bunch of flowers for him while he tied his shoelaces, and then quickly walked off and left her with the bunch of flowers.
Sorry to bother you. Is it okay if you can just hold these? Have a lovely day.
And recorded that reaction of the woman recognizing that she'd been given this bouquet. The reaction to that video was, oh, wow, what a kind and sweet thing to do. But that woman actually came out and said, no, I did not find that interaction to be pleasant. I didn't consent to that video being posted. And I don't like this representation of myself that simply because I'm an older woman, I would be overjoyed by somebody randomly giving me a bouquet of flowers.
You'd be described in an article as an old lady, and there was even an implication that, you know, I was maybe homeless, you know. There I was, this pathetic old woman drinking out of a cardboard cup.
And Harrison Pollock kind of apologized for this, but not really. And he never took down the video, which has over 70 million views. And that is the kind of exploitation and deliberate representation of people as subjects of sympathy without actually giving them any material benefit for that exploitation. And so that, in terms of the random acts of kindness genre, that's at the really problematic end of the spectrum for me.
So just as we wrap up here, Matthew, if Mr. Beast is driven by, you know, the spectacle, the kind of surprise, the shock factor, it's going to be hard to pull off the same stunt twice. It feels as though the bar gets higher and higher and higher and higher for what's going to count as spectacle and attract ever-increasing numbers, which is part of the goal. Where do you think he goes from here?
Yeah, I think this is an issue that they are probably grappling with right now, because for Mr. Beast, Jimmy Donaldson, in his home state of North Carolina, they have a mobile food bank that serves many communities in the area and is doing fantastic work. That's a really valuable service that they're providing, but they have to keep the revenue coming in to fund that service, but they can't keep making content out of that food bank service because eventually the audience is going to tire of it. And so, as you noted, they have to keep upping the spectacle of philanthropy-tainment in order to keep this perpetual motion machine going. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they manage that over the next few years, because eventually there will be some kind of tipping point where they can't keep it going. Hopefully at that stage, they will have a kind of stability where they can continue their existing services. But what also might happen is that, you know, Mr. Beast has a lot of imitators, not just in his regular kind of content, that kind of hyper-capitalist kind of content, but also in his philanthropic work. And one of the issues is a lot of those imitators make much greater ethical compromises in the work that they do and in the kinds of representations that they make in those videos. And that's also what I'm concerned about in the long term, is that kind of imitator of Beast philanthropy that goes down a more ethically problematic path, because credit to Beast philanthropy, the work that they do is often partnered with existing charities and nonprofit organizations and is done in a quite responsible way, I think. You can still make arguments about the sometimes crassness of it or potential exploitation, but for the most part, the actual administration of their services is done responsibly. But in the long term, I worry about imitators and what compromises they will make on their philanthropic efforts made for content.
Matthew Wade, it's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Matthew Wade teaches at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia. He's with the Department of Social Inquiry, where he studies charity and philanthropy. Matthew Wade spoke to you from Melbourne. Mr. Beast has addressed some of the criticism about his extravagant brand of charity. On Twitter, he responded to the argument that he's most interested in promoting himself. Quote, 100% of all revenue from Beast philanthropy goes towards running my food banks and helping ease human suffering. And since inception, I've personally put in millions into Beast philanthropy. That's the whole point. Make content around helping people to generate more money to help more people. Jimmy Donaldson, Mr. Beast, on Twitter. Here he is on the YouTube channel, The Iced Coffee Hour.
Our stuff centers around doing good, and No, actually, it excites me because, especially like on our Beast Philanthropy channel, that channel alone, like I've had hundreds of parents, probably even 1,000 at this point, just tell me stories of like their kids watch that, and then when they get Tooth Fairy money, they want to go donate it to charity, or like their little 12-year-old kid wants to go volunteer so because cool. they watched the Beast Philanthropy video.
Jimmy Donaldson, Mr. Beast, responding to a question about his influence on his audience. This is Tapestry, keeping you company and helping you make sense of the world. If you're listening online at cbc.ca, hello to you. You can also find us on the CBC Listen app, on Spotify, on Sirius XM satellite radio, and on CBC Radio 1. I'm Mary Hines. Tiffany Ferguson is a media critic and a YouTube creator herself since she was 11, the same age a young Jimmy Donaldson was when he launched his channel. Ferguson is now 27, and her channel has grown to nearly 800,000 subscribers. Jimmy Donaldson, now known as Mr. Beast, has featured prominently in a series Ferguson calls Internet Analysis.
One of the biggest struggles I have as a YouTuber is I wish that my livelihood didn't depend on getting clicks, getting people's attention, because it's really hard to compete in the attention economy. It's very hard to keep people hooked and subscribed and watching, especially over periods of years. It is very tempting to do whatever it takes. I really don't think about the analytical, strategic side of my content. Mr. Beast is just like, he's such a maximalist in terms of optimizing content, viewer retention. So his motifs are all very like loud and bright. And the way that he builds his content down to like the second, like he knows he has to do quick edits to keep people engaged. Every 2 or 3 seconds, you're gonna be seeing or hearing something else. That's what I find is so fascinating about his philanthropy work is that it is in part driven by what is clickable, what is driving traffic to his channel. Even going back to like his very first charity stunt video, the one where he gives away $10,000 to an unhoused man. At that point, obviously he hadn't practiced this kind of interaction. So I think there was a level of just like awkwardness about him. You know, the man mentions that he's living in a tent and Mr. Beast says,
You mind if we just see it? Or, I mean, just to give him a little bit more idea of how you live and stuff. No, we don't have to. No, we don't. I don't want to overstep.
No, it's just, I don't know, man. It's just embarrassing.
And kind of that moment of realizing he really is using this person's misfortune, their situation, as content. Like he's saying, this video would be more interesting, more effective. It would probably keep people more engaged if we showed where this man is living, you know? I think he has matured in the sense of somewhat becoming aware of what is acceptable in this kind of content. I don't know if he got any kind of backlash. He probably got mostly praise from that first, you know, giveaway video. But I think over time, he's probably looking at the media landscape and studying it as he does with all of his content and saying, okay, I think we have to be like a little more sensitive, or maybe we include a couple more soft moments, a couple of tears, but not too much. He's always very intentional about striking that balance of like heartfelt moments, but not making it a sad or overwhelming video. With a channel of my size, I'm only more and more aware, and I try to be more careful about what I create. If you told me, okay, your next video, 100 million people are gonna see it, nobody is gonna limit what you can say anything, I would probably shrivel up into a ball and never be able to finish a video because I'd be so stressed and so concerned about what message or what I'd be putting out to that many people. Whereas Mr. Beast sees that as an opportunity, a feature, a benefit of being so popular, the fact that he could possibly have unlimited, unrestricted access to hundreds of millions of people around the world, that's a little terrifying.
For us, we have 100 million people on average that watch almost everything we put up. You know, if you include non-English and English, everything we do, 100 million people will watch. When has someone else ever had that kind of power without having to go through a network or anything? I can just upload whatever I want. I could upload a black screen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And hit tens of millions of people.
I'm sure Jimmy the individual has some considerations about the sort of messages he wants to put out, but Mr. Beast as a creator, again, I think because his primary objective is numbers, it's hits, it's clicks, it's comments, I'm sure that that maybe supersedes whatever other objectives he might have. And also, I think Mr. Beast knows that being a more apolitical creator is to his benefit. I can't even imagine where he thinks he can go from here because he already has it all. In my mind, I'm like, how could you possibly want to add more to your plate? What more can you sell? But there's always more. More business, more products, potentially politics. Like, it really is endless where Mr. Beast could go or what he could sell next.
Tiffany Ferguson is a YouTube creator in Southern California. She runs the channel Tiffany Ferg. Eddie Hogg is a senior lecturer in social policy at the University of Kent. He studies charitable giving and public attitudes towards charity. Eddie Hogg is my guest. Hi there.
Hi.
You study the world of philanthropy and charity. Help me situate Mr. Beast into this picture. Where does he fit into the wider picture of what charity is?
It's a really interesting question because Mr. Beast, on the one hand, is part of a long tradition of the charity telethon, the idea that sort of celebrities encourage people to give to causes, often in quite spectacular ways, whether that's sitting in a bathtub full of baked beans or jumping out of an aeroplane. And he's just part of a long kind of tradition of that. On the other hand, he's something quite new and disruptive because whereas typically telethons have asked viewers to send in their money or major donors have given away their own money, what Mr. Beast is saying is that his spectacular philanthropy, the big spectacular things that he's doing, they make good content on YouTube, and he can then use that content to make money using YouTube's algorithms to do more spectacular philanthropy that in turn will make more money to do more spectacular philanthropy. So in that sense, it's something really quite new.
And this idea of spectacular and the spectacle, does that diminish the act of giving in your view? Does it sully it in some way? The fact that he is accruing a lot of money on his own and many, many, many YouTube hits for himself?
I don't think it does, no. There is a long tradition of spectacular acts of philanthropy, whether that's kind of, I don't want to say the mundane spectacular of doing a marathon, because there's nothing mundane about doing a marathon, or throwing yourself out of an aeroplane, or newsreaders dressing up in interesting clothes and doing a dance on the television. You know, these things have been around certainly as long as television has been around. And we've never thought of that as sullying philanthropy. I equally don't think that because Mr. Beast himself is profiting from the same systems that generate money for charity, is also generating money for himself, I don't see that as a problem. I think it would be if he was generating money in a way that caused harm that his philanthropy was then trying to address. So, you know, if a company selling sugary sweets or fizzy drinks are then donating lots and lots of money to a diabetes charity, well, on the one hand, they're causing harm, and on the other, they're saying, but that's fine because we're alleviating it. I think that's quite problematic, but I don't think that accusation could be levied at Mr. Beast.
But I think some of the concern and some of the criticism he gets is for, you take the spectacle, giving, quoting here, giving a random homeless man $10,000. You know, I mean, it's being framed as entertainment, and at the heart of it is a man who has fallen on hard times or who is impoverished or who does not have a home. I mean, is there a kind of, does that trouble you at all, that being played for spectacle and entertainment?
I think that The different videos that Mr. Beast has done are some are, as you say, to some extent problematic and others less so. I think that particularly on his Beast Philanthropy channel, but also in his more recent videos, he's made more efforts to situate and contextualise what he's doing within kind of wider discussions around poverty. So it certainly is the case that those kind of relatively grotesque kind of one-off giving people huge amounts of money without really addressing or asking any questions about how they've happened to be in that position are not necessarily particularly helpful. But then on his philanthropy channel, there's a video, You Change This Family's Life, where he spends time talking to families about how they've come to be in the position where they are in need, talking about, you know, their family circumstances, the things they love to do, the constraints on them. And that's really lovely. And how many people are trying to explain need and want in that way to the kind of audience that Mr. Beast has, which is millions and millions of mostly quite young children. So I think that certainly there are things he's done that I think are open for criticism. But I think on the whole, what he's doing is taking philanthropy, taking charity, and doing it in such a way that is, granted, spectacular, but is also role modelling and showing particularly young people that charity can be fun and can be exciting and that you can help people in all sorts of different ways.
Well, that's an interesting point because the demographics are really something else. Mr. Beast has a young audience, millions and millions of people, largely under the age of 20. What's the attraction, do you think, for a younger viewer when Mr. Beast is on the screen?
I think he's a great entertainer. He has also understood the way that YouTube works. If you watch his videos, they are nearly always building towards some kind of finale. And that means you want to keep watching because you want to find out what happens in the end. I am by no means under 20, and yet I find myself wanting to watch to the end to find out what happens. And that's entertainment, that thing that keeps you hanging on. He's also really good at the way it presents itself. So often on YouTube, you are making decisions on what to watch based on that tiny little picture you see as you scroll through it. It's like judging a book by its cover, but times 100. And he's really good at packing as much excitement and information into that little picture. So that's how he draws such a massive audience. And when they get there, they're seeing good content. It's well produced. There are lots of different recurring characters who each have their own personality. And Mr. Beast himself seems like an approachable guy. He's not intimidatingly handsome. He's not intimidatingly smart, although he is both somewhat handsome and somewhat smart. And I think that kind of really resonates with people. He feels like he's your friend and you want to keep watching him.
Do you think we are past the sort of old school view that the best kind of charity is the anonymous donor? You give and nobody ever knows that you've given. That is as good as it gets in the realm of ethical donations?
I think it depends on the circumstances. You may be familiar with the Sackler family who owned and the company that sold OxyContin. If you ask the average art lover what they associate the Sackler name with, they would probably say that family's patronage of a huge amount of art galleries, new wings, new galleries, new buildings, all across the world. And what the Sackler family did was use the vast wealth they'd accumulated by getting tens of millions of North Americans hooked on opioids. They used that wealth to fund elite institutions that would essentially whitewash the family name so that the name Sackler became known as something else. So in that sense, donors using their philanthropy to whitewash their reputation, and the Sacklers are obviously an extreme example of that, is something that we absolutely should not be encouraging. At the same time, giving to charity, particularly giving to charity by people in high-profile positions, has a role-modelling effect. So all of those young people who watch Mr. Beast videos, who think that Mr. Beast is, you know, a cool guy, they see him giving to charity and suddenly charity becomes a cool thing, something they like, and they may role model him. They may do as he does. When I talk to my friends about Mr. Beast, my friends who have kids, they say, oh, yeah, my kids say he's a really good guy, does lots for charity. That's a lovely role model to have. If someone that young people feel they have this really close big brother relationship with is role modeling them good things, then I think that that's a good thing. And that is true for other donors as well, whether that's sports people, whether that's pop stars, whether that's anyone else, it sends a really positive message. We know that kids are more likely to volunteer, more likely to give to charity if their parents have. And other role models obviously are not as important as your parents, but nonetheless are really important in bringing up children in a kind of pro-social way.
Well, I guess at the heart of all of this, you know, is a much bigger question. What do you think charity should look like?
Charity is a hugely important part of our social life. And I think it's important for both, if you'll excuse me getting a bit economics on this, it's important both for demand reasons and for supply reasons. In terms of demand, it's important because the state cannot do everything. The state will always have to make difficult choices about what it is to fund, what it is to support, and what it isn't. And that leaves people at the whim of the market. And that's fine if you have the financial and other resources to participate in the market. But there will be some people or some things that are unable to do that. So there'll be things left over. Once the state's done what it's prepared to, once the market has sold to who it can, there will be things left over. And that's where we need something else between family and these kind of public things to support people. So that's the demand side reasons. But there's also a supply side. There will always be a reason why people want to give to charity, want to set up charities. And that's because it is a way of expressing our care, expressing the things we care about, the things that we think are important. So the role for charity will always be to provide for those who are not otherwise going to be provided, or to provide the things that will not otherwise be provided, whether that is providing support for ex-offenders or former drug addicts, or whether that is providing stately homes and Scouts and Girl Guides organisations. But there are also going to be people who want to set up organisations, want to provide things. So I think basically there will always be strong demand and supply arguments for the existence of charity, and charities will always continue to exist and should always continue to exist in those areas where there is a demand for what they do, and in those areas, and often they overlap, where there are people willing to supply that thing.
So to bring this back to the individual level, if someone has watched Mr. Beast and been inspired and decided, I would like to donate, I'd like to make some generous gesture, give some money, what's worth thinking about first? What would you like that person to contemplate before going ahead?
The first thing to think about, and this is a nice easy one, is what your passion is. What moves you? What's the thing that you think that by giving your money that you could spend on other things, you could spend on food or clothes or whatever, what motivates you to give that away? What's the thing that's going to make you feel good, is going to make you feel like you've done good by giving that money away? And that's a really nice thing, because it asks us to think about what are the things in the world that we care about. The next thing that we could do is say, well, is that charity effective? And this doesn't mean getting a spreadsheet out, this doesn't mean looking at their accounts, but it means potentially looking on their website, seeing if there are stories about things they've done, about the ways in which they have spent the donations they've got, whether that's stories of, in the Make-A-Wish example, of kids who've had an amazing day out, whether it's stories of how the charity has gone in and helped people in a lower income area to enjoy the arts, or to enjoy art forms they maybe otherwise wouldn't have done. If that's the thing that drives you and you can see there's a charity doing that, then that's going to be a great place to give your money to. You can also talk to friends and family, see what it is that they've given to, see what it is that they think is important, charities that they have identified as being effective on the terms that they want it to be, and see there. But really, there's not really many wrong answers. If a charity appeals to you because its cause speaks to you, because it's something you think is important, then go ahead, give to it, and if it's a good experience, do it again. If it's not, don't.
Eddie Hogg, it's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Eddie Hogg is a senior lecturer in social policy at the University of Kent. He studies charitable giving and public attitudes towards charity. That's it for us this week. This episode was produced by Armon Egbali and Theo Van Buzekom. Technical production by Laura Antonelli and Ronde Williams. The senior producer is Rosie Fernandez. I'm Mary Hines. Thank you for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.